Hey, 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 listeners. Welcome to Live with Irenia Stories. Thank you so much for tuning in to this podcast. I'm your host, Irenia Rizal. If you're dropping by for the first time, don't touch this dial. And to my avid fans in over 41 countries around the world, thank you so much for continuing to listen to this podcast. And as well, thank you also for listening to the sister podcast, the Canadian Side Hustle and Business Podcast, where you get tactical tips to build sustainable businesses through the stories of fantastic Canadians in business. Now, to my global crew on the Live with Irene Stories, my goal is to provide you with great value for season 4. I hope that you got a chance to listen to previous episodes with Mansi, Kate from India, Astrid from Vienna, Australia, Lauren from Texas, and Roxandra living in the UK. Today, you will hear the entrepreneurial pivot of Ms. Wanda Bowman. She's a financial director and an author of the book called Financial Glow Up. She lives in Michigan, USA. Ms. Bowman is on a mission to help as many people as possible to figure out how to gain financial freedom in their daily lives. And this is not an easy task. She holds a master's degree in business from Lawrence Technological University and a Bachelor of Administration from the University of Detroit. She has over 12 years' experience working as a financial director at a Fortune 29 company, and she's leveraging over 20 years of experience to help others make informed decisions about their money. In this episode, we had a super conversation about Ms. Bowman's earlier career years. We took a deep dive into servant leadership and what that means, what being an active versus participating leader entails, the boomerang effect of leadership. We also talked about building executive presence as a career professional. And then we deep dived into, as a family, how to act as a corporation to manage your finances. There are quite a bit of golden nuggets there that you can hang on to. The question I want you to think about as you listen to this episode is, how important is it to build leadership and financial foundation to properly manage your family finances, as well as your career? This is Live with Irenia Stories, and I'm your host, Irenia Rousseau. Now let's get this started. Welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Irenia. It's an awesome pleasure to be a part of your podcast.
Well, I'm super happy to have you on. In fact, I haven't had anybody on from Michigan yet, so I'm excited.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah. And also with your background and experience, I think my audience will really benefit from the message that you have to share for them. So before we start, let's give the listeners a little bit of background about you. You know, how did you become the woman that you are today? And we can start from the very beginning.
Awesome, Irenia. So my story began in second grade. I've always loved math. And in my second grade math class, there was a time where we had to write the equations on the board. And this particular time, I was called along with three other people to write their equation on a board. And I wrote my answer down. And as I finished writing my answer to return to my seat, I scanned the blackboard and saw that two people had the same answer. So I said, okay, my answer must be wrong. So I took the eraser to erase it. And the teacher grabbed my arm. He said, why are you erasing your answer? And I said, because those two had the same answer, so mine must be wrong. And he said, let me tell you a lesson in life. When you know you are right, never let the opinion of other people change your mind. And from that point on, I was a little girl, probably 4 feet tall, but I felt 10 feet tall because I realized then that I can stand on my own laurels, stand on my own convictions, stand on my own knowledge. And so from that point on, in second grade, I realized that I had a gift with numbers and math. And to go on further, I went to college at University of Detroit, undergrad, majoring in accounting and a minor in finance. And when I got to the University of Detroit, I was like probably very, very few females were in this field. And I was like one or two in the room of 30 people. I felt very intimidated. I went home, told my mom, hey, I think I'm in the wrong profession. There's not many women in this field. And she looked me in the eye and made a profound statement to me that I carry right now, 30 something years later. She said, when you walk in a room, act like you own that room. And when you walk in the room, expect the atmosphere to change because you have entered the room. And when she told me those words, my confidence just skyrocketed. And from then on, I just felt like, hey, I can do it. I have the gift of math. I love numbers. I love accounting. So I'm going to pursue this field. And so I went on 4 years and matriculated through the University of Detroit with that major in accounting. And I get a job. My first job was with the City of Detroit as an accountant. From there, I went to Blue Cross Blue Shield. And from there, my whole life changed. I went there as a staff accountant, then got promoted to financial analyst, then got promoted to manager, and then got promoted to director. And when I realized that the gift that I had with numbers was good enough to be in anybody's room, I began to excel in my profession. And so those were the milestones. I'm leaving some pieces out, but one piece I want to go back. When I went to manager, there was a CEO who walked into my room and said, I want to make you director. And I said, I have no intention of being director. I'm complacent where I am now. He said, no, I want to make you director. So he put me in a 6-month executive leadership program where I traveled across this country. I went to DC, I went to Virginia, Texas, California, and I was voted out of the class to be the main speaker to speak about Medicare and the aging population. And I spoke to doctors, politicians. I got a chance to sit down and listen to presidential candidates pitch their platform. And I was able to present what I thought healthcare should be like, the financial implications of healthcare on the seniors in our country. And I was just overwhelmed with gratitude and grateful for that opportunity.
Right on, right on. There's so much to unpack from what you just said. Listeners, Wanda Bowman from Michigan, she's right here. And there are so many nuggets already that she's dropped for us. So definitely hit that rewind button. Stay tuned to this dial because we have a fantastic show for you coming up. All right, Wanda, so let's talk about the mentors who've impacted you on your journey, because you talked about this pivotal moment, this director that decided that you need to step up. But along the way, from the beginning, you've had mentors that have impacted you. So let's talk about those mentors.
Absolutely. So again, I talked about my mom. My mom is probably, she's no longer with us, but she is probably the greatest impact on my life was her. She always taught me confidence. And one of the things that she let me know is, if you have a gift to do something, never be fearful about other people's talent, because your gift will make room for you. And those were her exact words. Your gift will make room for you if you have a gift. But she also taught me is that you must sharpen every tool in your toolbox. You can't just say, hey, I know how to do this and go into the room and just be a part of the woodwork. You have to make a contribution. And so there's a book that I read called Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell. And it talks about the law of influence. A lot of people think that as a leader, you automatically have influence. But I've seen situations where a staff person led the project or led the particular project that the company was endeavoring to achieve. If you have the innate ability to make decisions, to execute on those decisions, and to take the consequences of what those decisions, sometimes your decisions may not lead to a successful result, but a good leader knows how to influence. Leadership is not based on title. It's based on your influence. And so one of the things that have catapulted me into where I am now is knowing how to influence, knowing how to impact the situation, impact the room, fill the room out. Sometimes if I'm in a situation, I may not need to lead that project. Maybe I need to be a participant and follow the leadership of someone else. But you always have to know in every situation, which leadership role should you be, an active leader or a participating leader? And so those are some of the things that I say make me successful, because I already always knew how to read a room. You should always know what the dynamics is. It's not necessarily the titles in the room, but what are the dynamics in the room? Know when to hold, know when to fold. And so she told me that.
Some Kenny Rogers there for us.
Absolutely. You got to know when to hold and know when to fold. And so one of the things I've learned is being a servant leader. Servant leadership is so impactful in my life, because whenever I'm in a situation where I need to make an executive decision, I always have to consider who are the customers, who are my stakeholders, who are the parties that will benefit from whatever decision I make. And when you have the mission in mind and have a vision, you have a vision to, hey, this is what I want to do. But your mission is how you accomplish it. What do you need? Who do you need to partner with? I don't know if you're familiar with Gallup, but we did a Gallup training module years ago where Gallup survey concentrates on your strengths. A lot of times people have weaknesses and people say, work on your weakness. But Gallup believes that if you work on your strengths and maximize your capacity in your strengths, you partner with someone that have your weaknesses as their strength. And therefore you make a team, you guys collaborate together, and there's nothing that you can't do. And so those are the principles, the guiding principles of my life. I work on the things that I do well. The things that I don't do well, I don't spend that much time on that, because I'm not going to ever be a good cook. I'm not going to ever be a good lawyer. That's not my strength. What I do is I've learned to focus on what I do well. When I'm in a situation where I need the expertise of someone else, that's why you got to have a network. A lot of people don't believe in networking, but I take every opportunity to network. When there's an event, if I'm not busy, I network, pass out my cards, and talk to people in different fields, because therefore I'm able to be able to tap into somebody else when I need them. And it's worked very well for me.
I absolutely love it. You're dropping some fantastic gems here. I love that you talk about being the active leader or the participating leader. I love that distinction. And yes, I am familiar with the StrengthsFinder. In fact, I did it a couple years ago, and same like you, that let me focus on what I'm good at and really tap into those resources. So I love that you're saying that. And this is a really good message for the audience. So listeners, hit that rewind button again. So let's talk about that active leader or that participating leader, because for young career professionals coming into their profession, whatever industry they come in, sometimes they do not consider themselves a leader, especially if they come in, you know, at that officer level. But as you mentioned, at any time in your life, you can be active leader or participating leader.
Yes. And so I look at active leadership as when the project is in your hand and you're told that you need to lead this project, and you're given all the freedom to be able to execute it and to pick who you want in your team. So as an active leadership, you own it. You own the project. And if the project succeeds, you need to be able to share the success. Don't take the glory. You own it, but when it fails, you should take full responsibility. And so active leadership is knowing when to delegate, knowing when to take on the matter at hand solo, where maybe, okay, if I delegate this, it may take longer. I'm gonna do this project. I'm gonna delegate the other areas in the project that I think that someone else could take on. An active leader A participating leader is, okay, I'm not the leader of this project, but I'm going to be here in whatever capacity the leader of this project is. And I realized you never should fight, or you never should challenge someone's, when I say this, so a lot of people say, oh, so you're just going to be passive in your life. You should never challenge a project leader on a decision that he's made when everybody's opinion has been gathered. That project leader decides, okay, out of these decisions, and I mean, out of these opinions that I've had, I'm going to go this way. You should never, ever make another leader look bad in front of the group. If you have a problem with the decision, you should go and do a separate sidebar with that person, but never embarrass, always be supportive. Never embarrass anybody that is the active leader. You as a participating leader, you should be flexible to be amendable to changes, because when they come to you, they're asking you for your opinion. But ultimately, it is their decision as the active leader to make the final decision for whatever the project is. So you have to know your role when you're participating. Offer your opinions when asked. And if you feel like something is going off track, pull the leader aside, the one that's an active leader, pull them aside and say, hey, I think if you may want to think about this before you make that final decision. So my whole thing is always, there's a saying that I heard years ago, and I don't know who said it, but someone said it. What we allow, we teach. So how you let people interact with you, if you're the type of person as a leader that you let people walk all over you, then you teach them that's okay. But when you act with integrity and act with dignity and act with respect, people will feel inclined to be a part of your team. They want to be a part of your team. And so to me, that's the difference between participatory leadership and active leadership.
Thank you so much for breaking that down, Wanda. I really appreciate it. I'm talking to Wanda Bowman, and we're going to talk about how to create executive presence as a female professional.
Yes, I am so excited to be on your podcast. And just the opportunity to share some of the nuggets that have helped me get to where I am now. So as a female executive and professional, I've been in this role at various organizations for probably over 25 to 30 years. And one of the things that I've noticed is I've always, when I worked at any company, I always tried to see who are the subject matter experts about that company, and always try to develop relationships so that I can learn more about that company. A lot of times we as female professionals, we go into a company, we get hired in for a position, and we just go to work every day and do that position instead of expanding our knowledge base to try to find out, okay, how does my position relate to the other departments? How do my position relate to the mission of the company? How does my position relate to the vision? How am I contributing? Because once you find those things out, and you start to make an impact, when that company decides to go another direction or they decide to promote, they're going to look at you because you have shown that you are engaged. A lot of times people go to work for a paycheck, but that has never been my primary objective in a job. My primary objective for any role that I have is to be engaged. What can I offer this company? What can I offer this position besides an 8-hour day job? What do I have? What skill set do I have? So one of the things I noticed in my younger years, and I'm just going to be transparent. Sometimes women, they get together in groups and they form different cliques. Mm-hmm. And in these cliques, they decide who they like and who they don't like. They decide what managers or what leaderships they don't like, and they talk about it. I never, ever was part of a clique, because my mom taught me is what you say about other people comes back to you. How you put your mouth on other people, you reap what you sow. It's a boomerang effect. What you put out, it comes back. And so one of the things that when people would come to my office in my younger years before I got into leadership and say bad things about leadership, I would engage it. I would say, you know, I'm not going to have that conversation with you. I understand that you're disappointed, but I can't engage in that conversation because I have not had that same experience you had. I do know your perception is your reality, but it's not my reality at this point. And so one of the things that I did, never engage in negative gossip or conversation, and that was noted at the top. And whenever positions became open, I would get called in, say, I see that you're not involved with a lot of negative conversation about our organization. You seem to be committed to the organization, and we like your values, and we want to put you in this position. So here's the thing that I want to say. When you go into the company, learn about the company, learn who the negative people are, stay away from them, be polite, be cordial, but stay away from negativity. Negativity will do nothing but bring you down. As a professional woman, when you want to climb the ladder of success, what you put out, people are watching you. When you're in a room by yourself and you think no one is watching, someone is always watching. Even when I'm in my office with the door closed, I always say somebody could be watching. People have ways to watch. And so always carry yourself as above the fray. When I say above the fray, if there's negative chatter, you don't get involved in that. Stay away from that. Don't try to be popular with the lay people. Be nice, be respectful, but don't try to engage in conversation that's negative because you want to be a part of the group. I've never been a part of a group. I've always been by myself doing what I do well. I have friends and I have family, but I don't have to go out with the girls after work to have a drink. I can go home. If I decide I have time, I'll go with you, but that is not why I come to work. I come to work to contribute. And so when you have that mindset that you come to contribute, your behavior would change. Somebody said this, when you change the way you think, you will change the way you act. When you change the way you act, you change the direction in which you're going. And so don't be intimidated by people that may have higher titles. If you know you have a contribution to the organization, contribute. I said this earlier in the podcast, but my mom taught me, don't be intimidated. If there's more men in your field than women, if you have received an invitation to be in the room, you're meant to be in here. And I used to say this often, that my mom told me, when I walk in the room, act like I own it. And then if I added this, when I walk in the room, if I receive an invitation, this is my room. This is my room. I don't care who else is in here. This is my room.
And I when love I go it. Into
this room, yeah, this is my room. And when I go into that room, I expect the atmosphere to change. That sounds so weird. But when I walk into a room, I expect somebody to glean something from what I say. Because if I have the invitation, I'm meant to be here. And if I'm meant to be here, I will contribute.
Right on, right on. This wonderful woman, listeners. So many great nuggets in there. I can't even interject because there's so many wise words, okay? And this is just great advice for my listeners, for young career professionals just starting up, and even for mid-career professionals, you know, if you mm-hmm. are making a pivot, or if you are in that adventure of your job and you're looking mm-hmm. at, you know, how to, you know, up-level yourself, you definitely yes. want to take in this wise words of wisdom from Ms. Bowman. Right, right?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, I love it. And listeners, this is how you build executive presence as a female professional. You know, in your career, you're really focused around the finance side of things. So let's mm-hmm. break down that portion of your story. Mm-hmm. How did you get into it?
So my pleasure. So the Financial Glow Up started kind of in a situation where it wasn't a pleasant situation. I was laid off from Blue Cross Blue Shield as a director. I had six-figure income. The Affordable Care Act started in, well, the Accountable Health Care started in, I think, in the 2007, where they realized that healthcare dollar was not maximizing its intention. its intention. So what happened was a lot of companies went out of business. I know you've probably heard of Sarbanes-Oxley. A lot of people went out of business because that they were not operating that healthcare dollar. They were using more money for administrative costs for salaries and putting less into the actual care of individuals. So as a result of that, a lot of companies went out of business. My company had to downsize. I work for the subsidiary of Blue Cross, which is Blue Care Network. It had to downsize. And we had multiple finance directors. I was the youngest finance director. I got laid off. So I had to go home and tell my husband that the six-figure income that we had together was no longer there. My husband didn't miss a beat. He said, don't worry about it. We're going to buy rental property and we're going to invest our capital that we have now, and we're going to replace that stream of income. And so what that taught me is never depend on one stream of income for your livelihood, because things can happen at the drop of a hat and that stream of income could be eliminated. So always be cognizant of the fact that you need to, many of us have more than one skill. And we always need to be able to tap into whatever skill set we have. What else can I do with this? And so what happened was I was just really, I was brokenhearted. I love what I did. And so I went out to lunch, not dinner, lunch with one of the VPs from another department that was still there. And she said, Wanda, you have so many skills. Don't worry about it. She said, write a book. I said, I don't want to write a book. She said, write a book. I said, write a book about what? She said, write a book about what you do. You're a financial person. You know how to deal with finances. I said, what?
All right.
She said, write a book. So I was off work for 3 years and I started writing books. And in the books that I've written, I write about how to, it's three things, how to find a career doing what you love, how to manage that career, how to take the money that you make and live beneath your means. A lot of times people may make $200,000. They get $1 million home or a $500,000 home. They live in paycheck to paycheck. But I had an aha moment. So one Saturday, my husband and I, we was living paycheck to paycheck. This was before the layoff. So I use these in my stories.
Yeah.
And we were living paycheck to paycheck. We were young college grads. I was an accountant. He was an engineer. And so we just was spending money frivolously. And so one day we said, hey, we just got paid yesterday. We don't have enough gas to last the next Friday. So we sat down, we made a pact that we were going to start paying attention to where our monies were going. So we did a budget. We started calculating, what are our incoming streams of revenue? What are our outlays of cash? And then we say, okay, we're spending money going out to dinner every night almost, buying fast foods, going buying designer clothes. Let's take that part of the money that we were spending for, we call those wants. A need is your basic things in life, food, clothing, and shelter. Wants are things that fall outside of that category. You don't necessarily have to have a designer bag. Now, don't get me wrong. I have designer bags, but what I did was set my priority. I had a goal. I wanted to save a certain amount of money. So when you're setting your goals or your parameters about where you want to be on your bucket list, then you have to deny yourself and make a sacrifice. And then that's how I learned discipline. And what you do is, okay, for the next 12 months, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to go out to lunch. I'm not going to do this. And then you save your money. Now, when you achieve that goal, then sometimes you can come off your budget and then buy yourself a designer bag or whatever. But you have to always go back into the mode of discipline, because what you do today will affect your future. And so one of the things that we do is we take automatically 30% of any income that we make, and we put it in short-term investments and long-term investments. And we live off of the 70%. The 70% becomes our new 100%. And so once we condition ourselves to do that, we don't even miss the 30% that we save, but we're storing up and building up our financial empire. And that's how I came with the terminology financial glow up. I went from being a poor manager of my money to being able to discipline myself to be able to store away and have investments. Now we have rental property. We got revenue streams coming. I got revenue streams coming from different areas of of our skills. My husband has different skill sets. So when we lose, if we lose one stream of income, we always can tap into another. And I want to say this too. There's a saying that I say, when money realizes that it's in good hands, it will stay and invite his friends to come over. And that's how you multiply your money.
I love it. I love what you just said there. And I also love the fact, you know, you talk about setting priorities, you know, for oneself. And that is so important. Listeners, what Wanda just gave, the example of her life and how she took control of her finances, definitely hit that rewind button again. Take some notes, because these are some super golden nuggets. And Wanda, I'm really enjoying this conversation. I really like the fact that you took what many would consider a negative blessing and turned it into a positive blessing by becoming an author. So your big pivot into the entrepreneurial world. Yes. Fantastic, right?
And also, Arenia, I also am now a director of another company, making more money than I was making at the other place. Everything fell in line. That, like you said, I learned my lesson and pivoted and went into another area. But then opportunity came and knocked, and I'm now doing the same thing for another company, making more money.
Well, that's excellent, Wanda. I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad that you took this resources that you've built and expanded on it. And that's how it's done, listeners. Right, Bright?
Yes.
So I definitely want my listeners to find out where to get your book. So can you let us know, please? I'm curious.
Absolutely.
Myself.
It's my pleasure. So you can go to Amazon.com. You can type in Wanda Bowman, or you can type in The Financial Glow Up. And I have two books. The first book that I wrote is the launch of The Financial Glow Up. And it's called Building Your Financial Empire, One Brick at a Time. The second book kind of expands on some of the theories and some of the tips that I did in the first book. And it's called Money, How to Make Your Money Work for You. And you can also go to my website, WandaBowman.com.
All right. I love it. I love it. For young professionals who are listening to this episode with you, who have young families, you know, what critical advice you would give them, you know, to keep their pulse on their finances at all times?
Absolutely. It's my pleasure, Arenia. So one of the things that I said, you need to act like your family is a corporation. You're going to have a CEO and you're going to have a board of directors. And so whoever the spouse could be, the husband or wife could be the CEO, and the other one is the board of directors. And so what we did that made us successful as a family unit is, when you get married, a lot of the college graduates, you already have a career, you have your own income. But when you get married, especially as young couples, always consult each other before you make a major purchase. When you were independent, you can go out and get that laptop. You can go out and do that. But when you become married, you become a unit. And I consider that unit a corporation. And that corporation, in order to be successful, the board of directors and the CEO need to be in alignment. Because if they're not in alignment, they're going to end up going, somebody's going to overspend. The other partner is going to be frustrated. They're going to get into financial duress, and then divorce ultimately can happen. I won't say it will. So the first thing I want to say is, for any major purchase for any young family that's coming up and trying to build your financial platform, always consult each other before you make that purchase. And back then when I got married, $100 was the limit, where if I wanted to buy anything over $100, if my husband wanted to buy anything over $100, we would call each other. It was a partnership. It was not one big I or little you. We were a corporation. We had a CEO and a board of directors, and we sat down at our dinner table and we say, this is what we have coming in. You want to make this purchase? Let's see if it fits within the budget. But never take the attitude where I make my own money and I can do what I want. If you want to grow together in unison, then you have to have one mission and one vision.
I love it. Say that again.
If you want to grow together in unity and be that financial empire that you both can be, then you have to have one vision and one mission.
All right, listeners, Wanda Bowman. So you got that right.
Yes.
Awesome. So let's head into, you know, some of the things that, you know, help to center you, right? You've got your North Star. What helps to put a pep in your step and a pride in your stride when you listen to music?
So I like to listen to jazz, and I like gospel music, and I really like all kinds of music. So what motivates me is music. It just stirs you up. I don't care if you're having a bad day. If you have a favorite jam, I call it my favorite jam of the week or my favorite jam of the month. New music is always coming out. So whatever music that really gets me, get my endorphins going and just get me excited, I'll listen to that song going to work. I'll listen to that song going wherever I'm going. If I'm going to speak at a seminar or wherever I'm going, I let the music kind of get in my spirit and invigorate me. And I think music is very relaxing. So when I come home, had a hard, long day, then I want to listen to some jazz, relaxing music. Going to work, I want to listen to some pep, upbeat music. I like, should I say who I like?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
as old as I am, I like Chris Brown, I like Beyonce, I like John Legend. I like a lot of those, and they always invigorate me. I used to listen to Mary J. Blige, Just Fine. That song, Just Fine, I would have that on a rewind, just rotating back and forth. And every time I feel like, oh, I don't want to do that, then I put on Just Fine, and it perks me up. So music is definitely, it enables me to get into to the mood that I want to get into before I go into the room that I have to go into.
All right, I love it. And I love Mary J. Blige. I like to know that's what helps to put a pep in your step and a pride in your stride.
Absolutely.
So I know we've talked about your books. However, I want you to think about a book that has really impacted your life. And, you know, if you could share it with our audience. I know you referred to John Maxwell, and I know there's many books on that. Is there something, a book?
Yes, there's a book that I started reading years ago called The Law of Success by Napoleon Hill. And the book has all kinds of examples, and some of the younger people may not can relate, but it talks about Henry Ford, how he started. It talks about Thomas Edison, how Thomas Edison, when he first created electricity, he kept failing and failing. He said, and people were saying, are you going to stop? He said, no. He said, I've just figured out 10,000 ways in which to be successful. He had failed, 9,999 times in that 10,000 way. Attempt was the eureka moment. Yes. He said, so I don't look at it as a failure. I've just discovered 10,000 ways in which I can be successful. And then it also talks about, real quickly, Henry Ford, how when he was building the car, he was the pioneer of automobiles. And that's why Detroit is the automotive capital of the world. And when he was building his car, he didn't even have a prototype yet. He had a sketch on a piece of paper. And he got hundreds of investors to invest. And people were saying, how are people investing in something that they don't even know if it works? And then they say, well, what if you fail and you have to give those people their money back? He said these words. He said, if I fail in this project, I have the innate ability to do it all over again. He said, when you have the ability to do something, if you fail at it, That is not an end of your vision. What you do is pick up the pieces and start all over again. And when he made that statement, the people that invested in his company, they began to pour more money because they were so infatuated at his confidence. And so that's one of the things that I always think in my mind. If I do something and I fail, I realize that I have the innate ability to start all over again.
I love it. We have unlimited do-overs, listeners. Okay.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, Wanda. This conversation has been so awesome. So we could go on and on talking, but we gotta wind this down. So
yes.
To my listeners, some last words of wisdom, because I know that, you know, we've touched on a lot of different things and you've dropped mm-hmm. a lot of great golden nuggets for them to take away, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, looking at their finances, whether it's leading as it relates to the active leadership or being a participating leader, and also the wise words, which we just finished with here in, mm-hmm. in terms of seeking counsel of a multitude of people before making a big decision. So mm-hmm. what wise words, your last words of wisdom for the audience, give it to us.
Okay, my pleasure. So this is one of the things that I do know, not that I've guessed or surmised, I know this. You attract what you are, not what you want to be. So if you want to be great, then attract great. And one of the things I also want to say, the little girls with big dreams become women with vision. And my last point is, without a vision, the people perish.
Wow. Those are some big, wise words that you just dropped on us here, Wander.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I know that my listeners are going to totally enjoy your episode, the wise words of wisdom that you've just shared. And of course, listeners, do connect with Wanda via her website. She mentioned it earlier, and I'm going to drop it in the podcast notes. All right? Right on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Awesome. Listeners, was this episode awesome with Wanda or what? If you got some golden nuggets, send me a note. Let me know what impacted you when you listened to this episode. If you love this episode, definitely hit the follow button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. In fact, just hit the subscribe button or the follow button on your favorite podcast player. You can also tune in to the blog nuggets at www.irenarussell.org. And if you'd like to be a guest on this podcast this season, I am continuing to take guests on a rolling basis. If you are looking to sponsor an episode or an entire season, I would love to hear from you. So definitely connect with me. Thank you so much for tuning in again. This interview was conducted remotely in my home studio. I'm your host, Irene Rousseau, and this is Live with Irene Stories. I hope you get revived in your current adventure or get super motivated for your new adventures in 2023. Thank you so much.